Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday morning. It's February 9th, currently 38 degrees here under mostly cloudy skies in Old Town Park City. Heber City at 40 degrees under clouds. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for a look at your forecast for the Wasatch. Back on this Monday, we've got a cold front approaching the area today, and that means cloud cover on the increase out there. We'll see a few peaks of sunshine, but mostly cloudy skies. There is a chance that we could see a couple of scattered snow showers making its way through the Park City area this afternoon as that cold front moves through. Temperatures will climb into the mid-40s, though, as we go throughout the day, so no major accumulations expected. The Heber Valley look for increasing clouds, a slim chance of a rain or snow shower making its way through with that front. Otherwise, temperatures climbing into the low 50s for highs. As we go into your Tuesday, we'll start off with dry conditions with mostly cloudy skies. By Tuesday afternoon, that front will start to lift back north as a warm front, and that will bring the chance of a little bit of rain or snow shower activity as we go throughout your Tuesday afternoon for the Wasatch back. Again, not expecting significant accumulations with this round of precipitation as it will be lifting back north as a warm front, so overall warmer temperatures expected. Highs will be in the mid-40s in Park City. We'll see those highs near 50 in the Heber Valley. As we get into your Wednesday, we'll continue to see the main chance of precipitation developing as we go throughout your Wednesday. Temperatures will be right around the freezing mark during the morning hours, with highs in the low 40s in Park City in the afternoon and highs near 50 in the Heber Valley. So for the Heber Valley, looking at mostly rain and making its way through the area during the day, could pick up a tenth to up to 4/10 of an inch of rainfall as that system moves on through. As far as Park City goes, we could see a little snow, especially for the first half of the day, changing over to some rain during the afternoon. There is a chance of some light accumulations of snow with that system. The better chances for accumulating snow will come as we go into your Wednesday night and a Thursday as temperatures dip back down into the 20s with highs struggling to get out of the 30s on your Thursday for Park City. So Wednesday night and a Thursday, a better chance for accumulating snow in Park City. As far as the Heber Valley goes, that's when we could see a better chance of some rain changing to snow Wednesday night and a Thursday morning with highs in the mid-40s by Thursday afternoon in the Heber Valley. Overall, looks like a mostly dry weekend forecast heading our way until maybe late Sunday. That's your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And with a look in the backcountry, on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Greg on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. How about that? We're finally talking about some snowfall coming up. So it's been a minute since we've been able to discuss some incoming weather. And what we're trying to tell people today is that we're continuing with a low avalanche danger. We've had a low avalanche danger for quite a few weeks now with a few little spikes of moderate when we've had some warmer temperatures and strong sunshine. But today's cooler temperatures, cloud cover and wind's going to keep the snow surface cool. So I'm not expecting any wet avalanche activity. Again, low avalanche danger. But our current snowpack is pretty complicated. The 4 to 6 weeks of clear weather, very little snow, has really kind of just made a mess of the snowpack. The snow surface is pretty weak at the mid and upper elevations on northerly facing slopes. And it won't take much of a load to make this reactive. You just heard the weather forecast upcoming. I think the snow we're gonna be getting today and tomorrow won't be enough. I don't think we're going to really see avalanche danger change until into Wednesday. But just trying to advise people that to change their mindset going forward, that the low avalanche danger we've been enjoying for the last 4 to 6 weeks or so, it's going to be changing. So expect a rising avalanche danger as this week goes on. For now, low avalanche danger. And just watch incoming weather.
Okay, hope it materializes. Thanks so much.
We do too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with Summit County Health Department Director Phil Bondurant. Later on, Park City Sister City Exchange Board members Tina Quayle and Carrie Walzer, joined by Park City High School student Maisie Binger, with details on their biannual visit to our sister city. And from the Park City Education Foundation, Vice President of Advancement Jen Billow, along with Vice President of Programs Kara Cody, with an update on programs offered by the Ed Foundation. Taking a look at some local news now, signature gatherers have just over a week to get a petition to repeal Proposition 4 on the ballot this November. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports clerks in Summit and Wasatch counties are verifying dozens of packets of signatures.
Utah voters are in the midst of a fight over the future of Proposition 4. The 2018 ballot initiative established an independent redistricting commission and neutral standards for drawing Utah's political boundaries. Now, signature gatherers are trying to repeal the anti-gerrymandering law. The Republican-led effort must collect over 140,000 verified signatures by February 15th, or 8% of all Utah voters, to get their initiative on the 2026 ballot. As of February 6th, they were a little over halfway there, according to information posted on the Lieutenant Governor's website. Around the state, there are reports of troubling tactics on both sides of the Prop 4 battle, from voters alleging they were given misleading information to reports of assaults on GOP signature gatherers. Utah County Clerk Aaron Davidson told Fox 13 on February 3rd his office has flagged hundreds of fraudulent signatures. Clerks in both Summit and Wasatch counties told KPCW they have not seen evidence of fraud in the signature packets they've reviewed. Wasatch County Clerk Auditor Joey Granger said her office has received 75 packets so far, with nothing that they believe is fraudulent. All signatures are manually verified by two certified staff members. Summit County Clerk Eve Furse said her office has received 38 packets, including over 500 signatures. Roughly 400 signatures have been approved so far. Furse says she is seeing more signatures get rejected, often due to people not providing enough verifiable information. She says the difference might be in part because Prop 4 is a statewide initiative rather than a local ballot measure.
You get a number who are not registered to vote or their addresses aren't current and they may not be putting down all their information because they're not as familiar with the person collecting the signature.
She says voters are more likely to provide complete information, like their birth date, if they know the signature gatherer. There are about 750 paid signature gatherers statewide, plus over 1,500 volunteers, according to Utah News Dispatch. First says a few people have also contacted her office to ask that their signatures be removed.
We have received a couple of complaints from people that they were given incorrect information by the person collecting signatures, and those complaints we have forwarded to the Lieutenant Governor's office for further investigation.
Granger said she has received about half a dozen letters from voters asking to remove their signatures from the repeal initiative. Utah News Dispatch reports Better Boundaries, the group that lobbied for Prop 4 in the first place, is asking signers to remove their names from the petition because of signature gatherers' alleged misleading tactics. Efforts to repeal Prop 4 come amid an ongoing battle over the state's voting districts. Judge Diana Gibson approved a new congressional map in November that gives Democrats a good chance of winning a U.S. House seat in the midterm elections this fall, a decision that angered Republican lawmakers. For the latest information on the Prop 4 repeal efforts, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from the Summit County Health Department, I have Director Phil Bondurant. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Real quick, it sounded like the group that you were planning to host during Sundance didn't materialize.
Yeah, unfortunately, after speaking with the Public Health Department in Boulder, Colorado, the logistics of that just was too difficult for them to come out. And as you know, the rooms are a little bit more expensive and harder to find. And we weren't able to have them on site, but we did have a few meetings with them ahead of time. And we'll continue to stay in touch with them and support them however we can as they take on Sundance next year.
Yeah, do you have a playbook or something that you go by? Or?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, after, you know, two decades of doing this in the health department, we've refined it to a way or to a level that it's a pretty refined process. And it takes some time to get there, and any time that something as big as Sundance shows up to a new city and they're just learning on the fly, we can provide that playbook to them and help them be successful.
Okay. Well, the health department provides a number of services. Let's just kind of step back and maybe outline what those services are and who's eligible for them.
Yeah, thanks, Leslie. That's a great question. I know that there's a lot of buzz on social media right now around what services are or are not available in the health department. And I can say with 100% positivity or assurance that all of the programs that we offer are still available in the health department. We don't, in our processes, the conversation around citizenship that has found its way into the state legislature this year is not our main concern or priority. It's not a question that we ask. We are here to serve people, be it residents or visitors, and make sure that people have every opportunity to live a happy, healthy lifestyle as we invest in building a healthier community for all. So the programs that we have offered historically continue to be offered at the highest level, including our Women, Infants, and Children program, WIC, all of our behavioral health services and prevention or substance use prevention services, health promotion services around diabetes, and some of the programming in our aging services. We still offer vaccines, immunizations. We have programs, vaccines for adults and vaccines for children for those that are uninsured and would like to receive those vaccines. We offer those as well. We still do everything we've always done. And if I have my way, we will continue to operate that way long into the future.
So you don't verify somebody's citizenship status?
No, because at the time they're here, whether they're a resident or they're a visitor, for us, health doesn't know boundaries. And so if there's someone here that has not had an opportunity to receive the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, but wants to protect themselves, we want that immunity in this community because it helps provide herd immunity or that protection that we rely on to limit the amount of time that our disease investigators would have to spend in the event there was a measles exposure. And so for us, it's about seeing people, helping people, and keeping everyone in this community healthy.
Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, referred to something happening in the state legislature this session, House Bill 88, this is sponsored by Trevor Lee, basically revising how state and local government agencies can verify lawful immigration status for individuals seeking public benefits. So how would this bill change what's currently being done?
Well, there's a number of concerns that I have when I read this bill. And it would influence a lot of what we do. The staff at the health department are not trained to verify citizenship. That's not what we do. We are trained to help people be healthy. And when I think about the front desk staff at our three locations and having to have that conversation ahead of receiving any type of service, that requires a certain level of training and validation and verification, and I just don't know that that's really what we're focused on. And so the fiscal impact for this type of change and the fiscal note that would accompany this is pretty significant. And we would have to modify a lot of the things that we do inside of our operations to make sure that we were compliant with this but still providing services at the highest level.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of read. The fiscal impacts, certainly higher initial expenditures to bring on whatever scanning equipment is needed to determine whether or not somebody has lawful citizenship. But there are those that say, well, in the long run, this is going to save the state a lot of money.
Yeah, and I'm not a fiscal analyst, and I'm not an expert in that field, but I do know a little bit about the cost of disease outbreak investigations, disease tracing, helping individuals stay safe with using resources to provide immunizations that are fairly cost efficient versus having someone become sick, end up in the hospital, or be part of a larger outbreak. And so there is a cost-benefit analysis, I'm sure, that could be done to outweigh that. And I'm not saying that I'm not a fan of immigration reform. I think that conversation is well overdue. But currently, we have to be a little bit more sensitive, especially in the fields of behavioral health, physical health, health prevention or promotion, that we have communities that rely on the health department for substance and just getting through this really difficult time, and I would hate to think that we would be limited or strapped in what we can offer to keep children especially healthy during this time.
Mm-hmm. Still, I mean, if it does become law, you'll be obligated to follow whatever it says.
Yeah, absolutely. The Summit County Health Department will be compliant with whatever shakes out through the legislative process. We always want to be transparent and honest with the use of the taxpayer dollars. But in the same sense, as it sits right now, that level of uncertainty is causing some concern for us.
Yeah. Any idea where the bill is in the process and what kind of support there is for it?
Yeah, as for support, I think it's still a little bit uncertain, but I do know that it's on its second substitute and is going through the legislative process now, so we'll continue to see where it's at. I know all of public health across the state, as well as a number of other services offered at the local and state level, are watching this closely, so we'll have to see how it plays out here over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, so at this point, have you done any planning or coordinating with other local agencies to kind of address implementing this? Or?
Yeah, the Association of Local Health Officers, the 13 of us across the state, are watching it closely, but it's hard to implement the unknown, and to what degree or what version of this bill we see maybe pass, or if it was to die on the vine through the legislative process. We don't want to get the cart ahead of the horse.
Yeah. So anything else in the legislature that's caught your concern?
There's a number of bills related to environmental health issues that we're working through right now. I think House Bill 471, which are amendments to Medicaid and the SNAP program, or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also has an element of requiring citizenship, work requirements, and employment verification. You know, earlier, or I guess it was in 2025, late 2025, when we saw the SNAP benefits go away, we saw the impact that had to individuals and families as well at a really difficult time. And so some of these changes around that as well will create concerns for those that are accessing behavioral health and mental health services as well as SNAP. And although we don't administer the SNAP program at the Summit County Health Department, when those benefits go away or are short, we do see an increased need where we feel an obligation to step in and help, which is why we assisted with the food drive that occurred at the end of 2025.
Okay. Let's get the latest on what sounds like the only measles case Summit County has had. Are all of the unvaccinated kids and staff back in South Summit Elementary School?
Yeah, they would have been back towards the end of January. And we are very fortunate that we only had one reported case as a result of testing out there. I want to chalk that up to really what the school district and the South Summit School District, their head nurse Amanda Monaco and their superintendent Greg, what they were able to accomplish out there in a very difficult situation is much appreciated. I've been absolutely amazed at how engaged our superintendents have been. Parents should rest assured 100% that these superintendents and their staff have the best interest of the children in mind. And the response that we saw happen in South Summit, I think, is reflective of what we would expect across our other two school districts and our private schools. And although we don't want to see another measles case, I believe that we are prepared to deal with that situation should it arise again.
Yeah. Did you see any of those who were unvaccinated come in for vaccines or...
Yeah, we've seen a few, a small uptick. I think that opened up some eyes for individuals, both from an employment standpoint as well as a financial impact, being not able to work or have to use your precious vacation and sick days. And so, yeah, we've seen a small uptick. And again, would remind folks that if that's something you're interested in, we'd love to talk to you about it and provide any information that you'd need. And vaccination in Summit County there's never a barrier to that. And if you are interested in being vaccinated or a child, having them vaccinated and feel that it might be out of your reach, we do have programming and assistance to help with that.
Okay. Finally, just wanted to touch on the initial SHARP survey results. Maybe first take a step back and tell us what the SHARP survey stands for.
Yeah, so this is the Student Health and Risk Prevention Factors survey that's done every odd year in grades 6, 8, 10th, and 12th. And what this does is takes a look at some of those the riskiest behaviors that we see among that teenage population, so that we can really identify where we can have the greatest impact and then allocate resources appropriately to have or to focus our prevention efforts and improve those outcomes in those children in those 6th through 12th grades. And this year, it was really exciting to see that for the first time in the last couple of years, we've had a large enough sample that allows us to find this to be statistically significant, which means it can be used for data analysis. And this is the second largest response we've had since 2003 in the number of children taking the survey. So anytime you have a broader survey or a broader population take a survey, the stronger the survey results are. And some of the findings that we've seen in there, they're very positive. We're excited about them. And we're excited about areas where we see there's opportunities for improvement and putting resources towards those areas and allowing our prevention and promotion folks to get out there and do some good work in the community.
Now, we've been playing a number of public service announcements about underage drinking and not doing it. Is that having an impact?
Oh, it absolutely is. In fact, underage drinking is one of the categories that in the last 20 years has consistently been in decline in the state of Utah. As Utah, we've always been able to celebrate the lowest percentage of drinking among underage kids, but it continues to decline, and we're well below the national average, and it's something that should be celebrated. And it's evidence that prevention works, and it's really exciting to see those efforts continue here.
Yeah, where else are you seeing some declines?
Yeah, really good question. I've been truly impressed that we've seen those downward trends, not only in alcohol, but tobacco, vaping, prescription, narcotics. It's really encouraging to see that focused efforts around things that we know children are dealing with have an impact, and we can get in there and we can stop that cycle. Children today, they're so smart, and when they're given the right information, they can make the right choice, and we're seeing that happen. One of the areas, though, that I think there's a lot of opportunity for some work to be done is around sleep and mental health. Now, these children are so smart because they have access to information at the palm or at the tip of their fingers 24 hours a day, and therefore they're exposed to things that I never was exposed to as I was growing up. But right now, about 40% of our children in Summit County are reporting that they're getting 4 hours or less of sleep each night. And that's due to screen time. I know in my own household, I have teenagers, and we struggle with screen time quite a bit. Not only the screens that are being used inside of the schools to do schoolwork, but then you come home and they have access to phones and video games and TVs. And so it is something that I think most families deal with. And I think there's opportunities to help those children make decisions that are best for their mental health, but also get them to bed. You know, when we are getting less than 4 hours of sleep a night during the most critical time of development for an adult or becoming an adult, we've got some work to do there.
Mm-hmm. What about marijuana? Did you mention that?
Yeah, marijuana use is down as well, especially in the realm of vaping marijuana. That became a popular trend here a few years ago, and due to the SHARP survey and the information that we were able to glean from that, there were very focused efforts both here locally through our prevention director, Pamela Bello, as well as across the state. And so when you see these efforts, when we have the data and that allow us to focus our resources in very specific areas, the results are pretty astronomical.
Mm-hmm. And then where are you seeing some increases? Because it seems like I recall nicotine patches packets that go like what, in your lip?
Yeah. You know, there's always those trending things that we tend to deal with, and that nicotine is one. Where I was really concerned and almost heartbroken when reading the SHARP survey is in 8th, 10th, and 12th grades, we've seen steady declines in suicide ideation, but we've seen an increase among 6th graders. And when you think about how that might come to be, those individuals that are 8th, 10th, and 12th graders have been exposed to prevention efforts, QPR trainings, different elements of suicide awareness and prevention, but our 6th graders haven't. And so when we get into 6th grade, it's a tough time of year. You're going into the gym class and you're changing in gym. You've got a different setup of classes than you had in elementary school. The stressors are different. We have an opportunity to get in there and focus in our 6th graders and make sure that they're living their best life, they're happy and healthy, and they're focusing on the thing that 6th graders should be focusing on in this world.
So parents can have a look at are all the results out?
Yeah, we have the results posted on our website right on the homepage, both in English and Spanish. It is broken down by state, and then the second portion of that is specific to Summit County. So any question you might have about that, you're welcome to call the health department at 435-333-1500, and we're happy to work through that with you. Or if you have an idea, something that you think might help get the message into the community and help our youth be successful, we're always open to that as well.
Okay, Phil, thanks.
Thank you.
Phil Bondurant, again, the director of the Summit County Health Department. Well, since 1984, Park City has been a sister city to Courchevel, France. The Park City Sister City Exchange was established shortly afterwards to support and enhance that relationship. Part of that is bidirectional exchanges. In the studio, tell us about the one that's happening this month. Our board members of the exchange, Tina Quayle and Carrie Walzer, along with one of the students who will be part of this year's exchange, Maisie Binger. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Tina, let's start with you. I think you've been doing this since it started. Maybe start by giving us kind of the backstory, how it happened and now it continued for more than 40 years.
Exactly. The mayor, Michelle Ziegler, was shopping the West for a sister city. And as he shopped, he fell in love with Park City. And so he approached the then mayor, John Green, to ask him if, you know, we wanted to be sister cities. And so it started in 1984. And it was kind of with the momentum of the only game in town back then, which was Park City Ski Area. And Robbie Beck McHugh embraced the whole deal. And so we threw a celebration. That's when we named the ski run Courchevel off the King Kong lift in Park City. And so a lot of people whose names you would know, like Bill Ligety, Bill Coleman, Amanda Peterson, Robbie Beck McHugh, were part of that originating founding group.
Okay, so we have a sister city. What does that mean?
Sister cities, you'll see a lot of sister cities like Provo, I don't even know, probably has 15 sister cities. And I'm guessing it might be because of the Mormon religion. But it's basically a handshake between cities where you share whatever is relevant to your city. When we started the sister city, they hoped to be an Olympic village, and we also hoped to be an Olympic venue. And unbeknownst to us, they became an Olympic venue in 92 and us in 2002. And it kind of makes me teary-eyed now to think that here we go again in 2030 and 2034. So you really couldn't have a better marriage in terms of a sister city.
Yeah. So the bi-directional exchange, I mean, happens for Park City students every 2 years during the February break. So
yes.
How are students selected to attend?
It varies through, you know, it just varies depending on the year. Right now, the selection process is difficult because of French immersion. We have a lot of kids that are fluent in French, that speak French better than I do, which is so exciting. I think it was 4 years ago we took that first group of students, and it was amazing to have a bus filled with fluent kids. It was just so exciting. So usually, because Courchevel's very small, there's only 2,500 people that live there year-round, they can't match the numbers that we have, and so we match one-on-one. So generally, we get about 40 applications, and then they only, you know, they struggle to match our, you know, 20 kids that we take. So it's competitive.
Yeah. So, Carrie, you're going to be one of the chaperones. So how is this all facilitated?
As a chaperone, I will be joining 17 students on the airplanes to get to, and the buses to get to Courchevel. And I'll be a part of the whole entire group while we're there to participate in all the activities that the French people have arranged for us to participate in while we're there. That includes skiing, snowboarding, trips to Chamonix and Annecy and all kinds of other amazing activities that they put together for us.
Yeah, I was going to mention, because Courchevel is kind of located between Grenoble, an Olympic uh-huh. city, and then Albertville, as you
right.
mentioned, also an Olympic city. So will you have time to go to those? Or
no, it's a scheduled program that we have put together, and the only other cities we'll be visiting, well, we'll fly into Geneva. We take a bus from Geneva up to Courchevel, and then we'll be taking another day trip down to Chamonix and another day trip down to Annecy.
Okay. So, Maisie, I'm guessing that you were part of that dual immersion at which school?
I was not a part of the dual immersion. I'm in AP French at Park City High School.
Okay. So where'd you learn French?
I started there, actually. I've been learning French for, this is my fifth year, and it's been wonderful.
Okay, why was this something that you wanted to be a part of?
My brother participated a few years ago, and he talked very highly of the program, made me want to go as well. And I also just love the French culture. I've been around it since I was a little kid, so it's very exciting.
Okay, so she's one of our fluent French speakers?
Ish.
Yeah. All right, so, I mean, how do you think these 10 days will help improve that for you? Because it seems like foreigners always want to practice their English, or is there some agreement that you must speak French and they must speak English?
I'm not sure. I think the parents would definitely be a little bit less well-versed in English, so you'll definitely get a bunch of practice there. And everybody always says you learn better when you speak more, when you're in the culture, and so I think that'll just help improve it.
Okay.
Drastically.
Yeah. So how did you get involved? You certainly knew from your brother. Do you have a friend that's kind of joining you? Or
Nope, I'm all by myself.
Yeah.
Well, except for the other students, but...
Yeah. All right, so how does it work then, that students will be staying with families?
What we do is we work with the French Association, and we try and match kids with similar interests. And so when we go there, for example, Maisie is immersed in one particular family that she has already studied. She knows how many children there are, if they have a dog, because you bring gifts and all of that. And then she will arrive, and the minute we get there, her family will pick her up and then whisk her off to their home. So, and then we get together, not every day, but there usually is one activity every day that we get together with a group where the French kids join, and we all kind of go to Chamonix together, or we might ski together. When we started the program, it used to be a ski trip, and we've changed that now. We didn't feel that that was true immersion, just having a ski trip. So now we don't ski a lot in the trip. We're there for 10 days, and I think we might ski 4 or 5 days of the visit.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll be completely immersed in a family. And we tell them not to speak English. And interestingly, the French aren't really gung-ho about speaking English anyway. And so Maisie will be surrounded by only French-speaking people while she's in the home. And it's really lovely because she has to adopt French culture. She's not going to be eating potato chips in between meals. She's not going to be having a latte in her hand in between meals. It's fun for the kids because it's very different.
Yeah, and then Carrie, you and Tina, what, stay in a hotel or something?
No, we stay with, there's a board over there, and we stay with board members on the French side.
All right, now where did you two learn French? The school?
My dad was in the military, and I moved to France when I was 3. So I was actually a French little kid. I went to French school when I was very young, completely fluent, more French than American. But then I didn't speak it almost my entire life. So once when the sister city came back around, I kind of re-engaged with it, with the language.
Yeah,
and it stayed in my brain.
Good. Carrie, how about you?
My heritage is French. From Louisiana, and I've always wanted to learn French, so I dove into it about 4 years ago, and I've been on hyperdrive the last couple of years trying to get fluent in French. So that's my, yeah, I'm not as fluent as Maisie or probably any of the students going, but there are a couple of board members.
We have one board member that doesn't speak French at all.
Yes.
But his skills are very important to us.
Yes. He has other skills.
He has other skills, yes.
All right, so Maisie, what are you most looking forward to?
I'm excited to spend time with all of the classmates that are joining me and all of their French counterparts, because I know of them at school, but we haven't really talked very much, so I think it'll be really fun to get that bonding time. And just being in France, I love it there. It's going to be incredible. So really excited for everything.
All right, so you've been there before.
Yes, not Courchevel. I've been to Paris, which is quite different.
But. Okay. So how much does something like this cost? And is there help for students whose family may not have the resources?
It doesn't cost very much. So what we do, surprisingly, it really doesn't cost very much. What we do is that families, we do group tickets with Delta. The families pay for their ticket, which it is what it is. Sometimes it's as low as $700, sometimes it's as high as $1,800. And then once the kids get to France, the French pay for everything. So I tell the families they don't even need 100 euros. And if you want to send 100 euros, they may not even spend it for hot chocolate and pastries and things like that. So it doesn't cost a lot of money. It's basically what I say is a $10,000 experience for the price of a plane ticket. The French do everything, and it's just so over the top the way they treat us. I mean, I always feel like when they come here that we're not doing it justice, but they always go, oh, no, it's so incredible in Park City. So the cost is not there. We receive an annual stipend from Park City Municipal, which helps us, do the day-to-day. And so we don't really carry a lot of money in the nonprofit. We are a nonprofit, and we don't charge a margin, and we're not paid. So it's very affordable. We do have scholarships. If somebody doesn't have money, I've taken some youth who we've paid their plane ticket over, and that's been really lovely. I've seen a few kids' lives changed from this program.
Yeah. So how does Park City reciprocate?
And then their match, so for example, Maisie's match will come here the end of July. They will spend 10 days in Maisie's home and in their partner's homes, and we do the same thing. And that's the only time that we really spend money, because we 2 years ago, we took them to the Days of 47 Rodeo, and it blew their mind. I mean, they just didn't even know how to manage all of that. We go to Jordanelle. We do big potlucks. We might go fly fishing. We go hiking. Deer Valley always offers us free lift rides, so we'll go up and we'll go hiking. Park City offers us free rides as well. And we just try and do Western things. The French are very enamored with cowboy and Indian stuff and things of the West.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you do bring gifts. So what do you bring from Utah?
A couple of cases of whiskey, a couple of cases of High West whiskey. They love High West whiskey. So that's the highest end gift. I bring that for their French board. But I always tell the kids, little dream catchers, little figurines, little Western figurines, Salt Lake salt, Western things, taffy.
Beef jerky.
Oh, they love beef jerky. Yes.
I'm bringing a little prayer rug from the Native American Adoptive Native Elders program for my host family.
Yeah, and do you have your bags packed?
I got some whiskey for parents.
Apparently the whiskey is
the whiskey.
Okay, well, so you leave when?
We leave Thursday.
Wow, okay, and you're going to be back when?
The 22nd.
Nice.
Yes.
10-day, yeah. And then...
And it's going to snow the whole time we're there.
Good.
Of course.
So you're pretty much out of school, so it's not an issue of missing school.
No, it's not. Yeah. Not for me.
No, yeah. And the school's very supportive. If they miss a couple days, which they generally do on the front end or the back end, the principals are always very supportive. And, it's a great program.
All right. Well, have a great time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll stay run for you, Leslie.
Okay. Tina Quayle, Carrie Walzer, and Maisie Binger, thanks so much. Well, in the studio now with an update from the Park City Education Foundation, I have the Vice President of Advancement, Jen Billow, and Vice President of Programs, Kara Cody. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Jen, you always like to start with an opening of what the Ed Foundation is and what you do.
Yeah, so we fund and support educator-powered initiatives that inspire all Park City students to reach their academic and lifelong potential. And what that basically means is we raise money to fund programs. We fund about 100 programs in the Park City School District, programs that wouldn't exist if it weren't for donor funding.
Yeah, so Kara, maybe as programs director, give us an idea of what programs that you are. I mean, 100, that's a bunch.
Yeah, quite a few. Here really to talk today about the preschool program. They are in the process of registering students, littlest, cutest students in the school district for next year. And there are a handful of seats left. There's a few in the three-year-old program at Jeremy Ranch Elementary, and a few in at McPullen for the four-year-old program. So if anybody is is interested in signing up their little ones for preschool, now is your opportunity to sign them up.
Okay, so it sounds like the spots that were open are pretty much being filled
up.
Yeah,
yeah, which is absolutely fantastic to have the community, you know, utilizing this very cost-effective, high-quality preschool program through the school district.
And is it all day?
You know, there, yes, there are all day spots now, and there's also half day for families that choose either that option. In addition, there's also aftercare. Now preschool is part of the after-school program as well, so really provide you know, full day of care for littles.
Yeah, so you don't have to be living within the boundaries of Jeremy Ranch to get in, or do you?
Nope, you don't have to. It's open boundaries for the preschool.
All right, so also after school registration is going to be open today,
correct.
I think.
Yep, and it actually opens today for families that are currently enrolled in the after-school program. It'll stay open for them, kind of for a priority for today. And then starting tomorrow, it opens up for new families.
Okay, and so what does that provide?
That provides care from after the school day ends, so, you know, 3 o'clock-ish on Monday through Thursday up till 6 p.m. And then from Friday, you know, there's early release. So students are out at 12:30, and that is care from 12:30 all the way to 6 o'clock. In addition to care, there's also academic support for students, enrichment activities and opportunities, just through all of our amazing community partners here in Park City. So yeah. Everything from Egyptian theater to eats to science lessons. Yeah, just all kinds of great opportunities for kiddos.
So are we talking K through 5
Yep,
preschool through 5?
Preschool through 5, mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah, okay. What's something like that cost?
You know, it is, I believe, around, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the number now.
Probably online.
Yeah, it is online. All the information is on Park City School District's website. So log in, check that out. And then there also is scholarship for free and reduced students as well. So don't want that to be a barrier for families.
There's a lot of scholarship money out there. So definitely if you're, if you look at it, and even with the price, it's less than half the cost of, I think, what most of the private preschools are, you know, be sure to talk to the folks at your school.
Yeah, I'm guessing that fills up pretty quick.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah, a very, you know, high quality program. My son participated in the after school program when he was little, and just, you know, so fortunate to have that resource just right at the schools to get that academic help. The after school staff works with classroom teachers. So if a kiddo needs help with math, reading, they can get that additional support, as well as snacks, playtime, and then the, you know, the enrichment opportunities through all the community partners. It's really just incredible value.
So that's offered at all 4 elementary
Correct.
Schools.
Yep.
Okay. Let's see, after a year of strategic planning and 6 months of working with the district educators and community, Jen, you're saying that you have revised and streamlined your 8 signature initiatives and not pared those down to just 4?
Yes. So, Leslie, we've been coming on here talking about our 8 signature initiatives for a very long time. Probably you could reel them off. But I think for a lot of people, it could be confusing or trying to remember the 8, right? So after this 18 months of really planning and looking at what we fund, we really did realize that most things go into 4 areas. And so the first one of those is personalized learning. And that is really meeting students where they are. So it might be, for instance, one of our programs that we fund that might fall in personalized learning is the coffee cart program for kids who are in the special education program. So that's really specific to those kiddos. And then real world learning is another big piece of what we fund. That was one of our signature initiatives, and that just continues to grow. Real world learning, anything from getting your EMS certificate in the high school, or getting an aviation drone certification, to learning to play music, and those are all real world learning experiences. Elevating educators is our 3rd one, and so we've always wanted to support our educators, and we do that whether it's through the Excellent Educator Award. We often get grants for professional development opportunities for them for training. So that's a big piece for us, is supporting educators. Classroom grants and express grants are elevating educators. So all of those fall in that. And then the 4th one is closing the opportunity gap, and that is every child, every chance. And we have had, you know, decades of programs like that. Bright Futures is one of those programs, Latinos in Action. Frankly, preschool and after school help close the opportunity gap as well.
All right, so, I mean, of those 100 programs, you've kind of got 25 and about those four categories or priorities?
It's interesting because some of them will fit in many, many different categories, all four. So, I mean, you could say, for instance, with Latinos in Action, that's closing the opportunity gap, but there's real-world learning opportunities because they're volunteering in schools and they're doing translating out in the community. So, you know, there's two right there. It's also personalized learning. It's very specific, you know, to those kiddos.
So that gives you flexibility then to kind of pull from one fund and put it into another?
It does. It gives us a lot of flexibility, and I think it's much clearer for people to understand what we fund, and it which in the turn we hope will make it easier for people to understand what they're giving to.
Okay, let's see. Scholarship season is underway. Tell us what you got going on.
It is. This past school year, we've committed over $150,000 to scholarships for the Bright Futures program, and look to making that same commitment for students next year as well. Now that we are, you know, getting into that college decision time, I know that there's probably a lot of anxious students out there, and just want to, you know, continue to help first generation students achieve their post-secondary goals and dreams. In addition, also have $25,000 committed for community scholarships through the community scholarship office at the high school as well. So just really excited to help Park City scholars continue their post-secondary goals.
Okay, and that's what students are probably busy doing is applying for those community scholarships.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure when it opens.
I think they open in a month or so, right after the break. But I'm sure that they're probably compiling essays and, you know, pulling transcripts, doing all those things.
Yeah, I mean, because it's a lot more than $25,000 is given away.
Yeah. I mean, the community scholarship program, the high school does an amazing job with that. That's a huge program. Lots and lots of $500,000 scholarships to. I mean, you name it. There's an I Love Boston scholarship if you're going to a college in Boston, you know, all the way to, we have a couple scholarships that we house that are for music, for instance, in memory of students who have passed away. And those, that's a great way to keep their name moving on. But for us, and this is a little separate from the community scholarship program, we do have, we continue to fund scholarships for the Bright Future students while they're in college. And that's why that $150,000 is such a big number.
Okay. Finally, the date has been set for Running with Ed.
Yes, yeah, so that's so exciting. May 16th, always the third Saturday in May. It's a little earlier because the first Saturday was early. So it's going to come up quick. Early bird registration is March 16th. We're not here in March, so I just wanted to be sure to let all your listeners know. And if you don't know what Running with Ed is, it is an eight-leg relay race around town. With the construction at the high school, we are going to go back to the leg where you run by the White Barn and do an exchange at the first time parking lot. So that's always a beautiful run, really fun. I just want to remind everybody, like, this is, we don't time the race at the exchanges. There might be healthy food. There also might be chocolate covered strawberries. There's a great party that at the end at the field house with music, food that's provided by Westgate, Park City Brewing, beverages. It's a great celebration of education. And frankly, if you want to run one leg and then come to the field house, we don't really care. it's just a time to have fun and really celebrate the amazing public education that we have in this town. And this fundraiser raises money for our classroom grant program. So that is one way we're elevating educators, is we provide about $200,000 to $250,000 in classroom grants. And Running with Ed raises that money. So if people don't participate, we can't do as much with classroom grants. So we hope to have a big rush on registration on March 16th.
Okay, because that's the early bird registration.
That is early bird. You'll save $50 a person if you register March 16th through 31st.
Okay, anything else?
I don't think so. Just want to, you know, thank the community for supporting not only the Ed Foundation, but, you know, our schools, our teachers, and our students.
Okay, Jen Bello, Kara Cody, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Well, some 300 locals gathered at the Utah Olympic Park to celebrate the start of the 2026 Milan-Cortina Winter Olympics. KPCW's Christine Weller reports many were excited to see the Parade of Nations featuring Utah and Park City-based athletes.
Hundreds of locals bundled up Friday night to watch the 2026 Winter Olympics opening ceremony at the Utah Olympic Park. The venue just outside of Park City was fitting as Olympic athletes from around the world trained there. A caravan of food trucks offered refreshments as guests gathered around fire pits to keep warm while watching the three-hour program. Susie Townsend was one of many sporting a Team USA beanie and sweater. She said she borrowed the gear from her son, Henry Townsend, an Olympic hopeful who earned men's slopestyle gold at the 2024 Youth Olympic Games. Susie Townsend said she was most excited to see the fashions during the opening ceremony.
I think all the countries have really gone for it. The fashion center of Milan, I think, kind of raised the stakes for it.
Paul Landy and his two-year-old daughter, Aurelia, attracted a lot of attention at the watch party. She was dressed up in an American flag snowsuit. Landy was also sporting a 2002 Salt Lake City Olympics jacket, saying the pair liked to match. He was most excited to see Team USA come out.
It's always emotional seeing the whole team, and like everybody's worked so hard for their dreams to get there, and I think that's just like the coolest part of the Olympics. It's, you know, the hard work and dedication that it takes for them to get there.
Landy and Aurelia are also looking forward to the Olympics returning to Utah in 2034. Landy said he plans to volunteer and get involved. As for Aurelia, Landy said she's already skiing and could be in the Olympics in a couple of decades. Christine Weller, KPCW News.